Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. So happy that you are with us. So sorry if you normally listen on the social media outlets. Something has been changed in our system that is apparently beyond our ability to repair here at the local level. We've had our crack engineering staff in studio already this morning, and we are not able to figure out why we have no audio on our feeds out of the studio. So we are working on that. Hopefully they'll have it fixed before later in the day. But if not, certainly by tomorrow, I'd like to think we'd have this figured out. Carl's not looking at me confidently, but I think we will.
It's not anything local. It's something that the big bosses did to make sure that we all sounded great today.
Oh, great. That's fantastic. But anyway, you can always listen on the Odyssey app, obviously over the radio, which is free. You don't even have to put a quarter in the dashboard or anything. It's free. So we got you covered here. Coming up, by the way, congratulations to Gino from St. Louis, who won the two tickets to see Styx. And, of course, Kevin Cronin of REO. They'll be here in August. We'll be giving away tickets the rest of the week, so stay tuned for tomorrow.
And Steven yelled at me for saying that the song we were playing was from Kilroy Was Here. I wasn't saying that that song was from Kilroy Was Here. I knew that that song was from Paradise Theater. I was asking Kim if she'd ever heard of Kilroy Was Here, and she doesn't know anything about Styx.
Yeah, never. Just as a rule of thumb, never challenge Carl Middleman on rock trivia because he knows all of it.
That's not true, but thank you.
Okay, would you take 98%?
I will go 90.
Okay, 90. All right. So it's always a risk to challenge Carl Middleman on rock trivia because he knows it. I'm just telling you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Victoria Coates. She used to work for the Trump administration. Maybe she'll work for them again. I don't know. But of course, she's with Heritage now and has got a new book out talking about Israel and what's going on over there and what needs to happen maybe on January 20th moving forward to secure Israel again, as Donald Trump was on the path to do before he left office the last time. Bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to our friend Mark Walters. There's a whole lot going on, not the least of which is they caught the guy who committed the murder in downtown Manhattan, and all they want to focus on is the fact that he had a ghost gun. You have to say those words quietly because it makes it scarier if you say the word ghost very quietly, because that's the idea of the whole word. He had a ghost gun. So we'll get to Mark Walters at the bottom of the hour, and we'll talk more about that. I'm obviously not making fun of the shooting. I'm making fun of the fact that instead of focusing on the mentally deranged 26-year-old who killed a man in broad daylight, it must be because of the gun. So once again, we ignore the problem and we focus on the inanimate object. So we'll get to that at 7:37. Right now, though, Carl Middleman, we need to get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I miss my son. My son didn't have to go through this. I didn't have to go through this either.
Yeah, that was Jordan Neely's dad, who is now suing Daniel Penny because his mentally deranged son threatened to kill people and got taken to task for it on a subway. He hadn't spoken to him in years, but now he's suing Daniel Penny in civil court over his son's death.
In America, we believe anything is possible if we do it together. And that's what we've done, damn it. We're going to continue doing it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe Biden, for whispering one more time. Maybe that's the last time we'll have to hear that. I don't know.
People want to jump up and choke us and kill us for being loud? How about we do the same?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's Hawk Newsom up in New York. He's been one of the most radical of all of these BLM protesters over the years. He's now calling on black people to rise up and kill white people because clearly race is the only reason Jordan Neely died in a subway in New York. Not because he was threatening to kill anyone.
Lawmakers are filing bills to tackle violent crime across Missouri. The new bill filed by a Democrat from Columbia aims to stop people who are under 21 years old from legally buying automatic weapons.
Little breaking news there. If you weren't aware of it, apparently it's currently legal if you're under 21 to buy an automatic weapon. Because if you're anybody else, getting a hold of an automatic weapon is extraordinarily difficult and expensive, if I have to mention. Like, it probably might cost you like $25,000 to go through the trouble of securing a license to own a fully automatic weapon in the United States of America.
I actually didn't realize that.
Well, but the point is, I played that bite. I played it earlier this morning, and it's words matter. People who support the Second Amendment get frustrated because they listen to the media, which constantly beats the drum for gun control. They're all in on it. Most of them are left-leaning. Let's face it. We know what news the way newsrooms are made up. If you don't want to ruin your credibility, learn what you're talking about. Learn it. The bill that's been proposed has nothing to do with automatic weapons. What they're trying to do is prevent kids under 21 who can still buy long guns from buying semi-automatic hunting rifles, like or a semi-automatic shotgun, right? To go bird hunting. This is what they're talking about. But when you call them automatic, for people who understand what that means, it decreases their confidence in your reporting moving forward when you don't know the difference enough to see it on copy and yet still let it come out of your mouth.
Keep in mind, it usually would have to go through a reporter who then would send it to a producer to look over, who then would send it to an executive producer to look over, who then would have the anchor pre-read it before they then go read it on the air. So there's several people who are supposed to be looking at this, and you'd think one of them would catch that, but they don't.
They didn't. The last time it happened, it had to deal with offending people of color who lived in North St. Louis, right? And they had to go through sensitivity training, particularly at Channel 4, I understand, because of that comment, which was written by a writer, made it through the executive producer to the anchor's desk, and yet nobody caught it. Right?
And wasn't Corey the one who was off the air for a couple of days if it was? He should take some responsibility, I guess, for it. But ultimately, the producer and executive producer, whoever wrote that, should have been held responsible. And something tells me they were not.
Channel 4 is not the only one guilty of this. My point is simply the fact that don't refer to a weapon as an automatic weapon. Nobody in Missouri is buying automatic weapons. I know people who have the ability to do that, but again, it's they're rare and it's expensive. You can do it, but that's not what this bill is dealing with. Every single one of these folks, if they have to take sensitivity training for the other thing, they should all be forced to go to the Range St. Louis West one day for a training class where they're taught the difference between a revolver and a semi-automatic handgun and an AR-15 and a Ruger Mini 14 and a hunting rifle. I mean, they need to be educated on these things if they're going to report on them. That's all I'm saying. All right. Soapbox is over. Let's get to Victoria Coates. She's coming up next. She's got a new book out on Israel and what's going on over there. And, of course, I want to get her take on what's happening in Syria right now, where protesters are in the streets celebrating that Bashar al-Assad has apparently fled to Russia. We'll be back in a minute. Yeah, so sorry about that. I was looking, Carl, for this story this morning. This is reporting from somewhere in Syria, and I don't know if it's Damascus or Aleppo or where he was. Richard Engel of NBC News. Listen to this.
There is one word I'm hearing over and over again. It is Hurriya, Arabic for freedom.
Arabic for freedom, and then he gets drowned out with a guy who's got a fully automatic appears to be like a 50 cal on a truck behind him, and he's firing it in the air. It's in celebration of Bashar al-Assad being run out of Syria. I mean, it's big news, and we've been talking about it all week anyway. Fortunate enough to have Victoria Coates on with us this morning, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Trump. And, of course, she's also a foreign policy expert with the Heritage Foundation these days, has a new book on the market as well. Victoria, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you on. I mean, and timely for us. So what do you make of what's going on in Syria and sort of the vacuum that's being created as Donald Trump takes office?
Yeah, this is really a historic series of events, because bear in mind the Assad family has ruled Syria with an iron fist for more than 50 years, so more than half a century. And they seem sort of inevitable. They were never going anywhere. We know the Biden administration was trying to approach them about potentially doing a deal to peel them off their Iranian paymasters to try to get Assad to be more oriented toward the West. And they were even pressuring the Israelis to give them territory in the Golan Heights to sweeten that deal. And I'm sure Assad would have been happy to take the territory and any economic relief that came with it. But there's no way he was ever going to voluntarily renounce the Iranians. And the fact that he's in Moscow now tells you everything you need to know about his relationship with the Russians. So good that he's gone. That was always a fantasy that he could be turned. But we've got to be careful, Mark, about these HTS rebels supported by Turkey who have, you know, over the last 2 weeks, been on this lightning campaign to topple that government. They're all a designated terrorist group. Their leader, Al-Gilani, has a $10 million bounty on his head. And, you know, it's possible we may have released a worse monster here.
Wow. I know you've written a book on Israel and obviously the state of things over there. Does it have a direct impact for Israel at this point?
Yes, this is going to be a key development for Israel. In the book, The Battle for the Jewish State, the second chapter delves into the history of the U.S.-Israel alliance, which involved Syria over and over again. You know, Syria was one of the Arab nations which, after the Assad took over, was very actively engaged in trying to destroy the modern state of Israel. And once that didn't work, they got involved in supporting, after 1979, the Iranian regime, as I said, but also Hezbollah and Lebanon. They were the main conduit between Iran and Lebanon that fueled that Iranian terrorist proxy. So this is a huge development for Israel. I was there last week. They were actually concerned with the point I just made that getting rid of Assad is good, but not if we replace them with a bunch of Al-Qaeda and ISIS offshoots.
Sure.
So they are taking very dramatic action now to try to shore up the security of their northern border. They've been really worried about the border with Lebanon. Now they've got to be worried about Syria, too, and they're also doing the Lord's work, destroying Assad's weapons caches, including, in concert with the Americans, his caches of chemical weapons.
Well, this is such a key time, like you mentioned, for Israel, and now you have Benjamin Netanyahu in court, right? He's testifying his own trial for these supposed corruption charges. I mean, what kind of challenges does Netanyahu now face in light of all that?
Yeah, Kim, this is sounding a little familiar, isn't it? That the one guy who's showing actual leadership on the world stage is suddenly being dragged into court on corruption charges.
Yeah.
And that was all anyone in Israel would talk about last week, is how can they do this at a time of war when the country largely supports, I mean, the large majority support Netanyahu in his prosecution of the war. They're very supportive of the actions he's taken over the last 3 months. Not to, you know, appease Hamas and Hezbollah, but actually decimate them, take out their leadership and their ability to function as organized fighting forces. And that's a huge step, not just for Israel, but for the United States. Bear in mind, these people have a ton of American blood on their hands. And so I think this is really unfortunate timing for this lawsuit, but as I said, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah, true. We're talking to Victoria Coates, who's got a new book out called The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. There's a big opportunity here that you see for Donald Trump in the Middle East, where he was already on the right track when he left office last time.
Absolutely. And that's actually the key theme of the battle for the Jewish state, which is, you know, you have 4 years of the Trump administration. You wind up with the first peace deals between Israel and Arab neighbors in 25 years, a really extraordinary achievement. I guess I missed the part where he won the Nobel Peace Prize
yeah.
for that, which he absolutely deserved. But it, you know, then you have 3.5 years of the Biden-Harris administration, you wind up with October 7th and now a year of horrific war. So, you know, those two records are crystal clear, black and white to me. And I think not, again, coincidentally, we have Hamas suddenly producing lists of hostages they're prepared to release, knowing after President Trump's statement on Truth Social last week that there is going to be, quote, hell to pay if they don't let them out, first and foremost, the Americans.
Tell you what, Victoria, we'll look forward to seeing you on Fox News here in a few minutes, I understand. The book is available on December 17th, so you can get it in time for the holidays. Victoria Coates, great having you on again. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. The Battle for the Jewish State, I'm looking at it on Amazon. Pre-orders now. The title's released December 17th, so coming up early next week. You can get your hands on it. All right, coming up, our friend Mark Walters. We'll ask him his opinion on the Daniel Penny case.
I just feel like that tells us everything. If we do not want violence on our subways, and the point of our justice system is a level of accountability to prevent a person who does not have remorse about taking another person's life.
If you ban them in the future, the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
Put that double barrel shotgun and fire 2 blasts outside the house.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
This is 2A Tuesday, brought to you by the Range St. Louis West.
All right, Mark Walters with us from Armed American Radio. Welcome back to the show, brother. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, my
friend?
Good morning,
fine.
Jim.
Morning.
Yeah, sorry to play Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this early in the morning, but that was her shocked reaction to the fact that Daniel Penny is relieved that he's not going to jail for being a good Samaritan. She's upset, and she's afraid that this is going to encourage more violence on the subways. It wasn't Daniel Penny that caused the violence. It was a mentally ill human being who threatened to kill people, and Penny saved the day. What is wrong with America?
Progressive DAs and progressive ideology and people like AOC. Let's make this point very clear about the man that Daniel Penny stopped on the subway that day, guys. He had a rap sheet over 11 years long that totaled 42 arrests. He was averaging 4 arrests a year. That breaks down when you do the math. Liberals might need a calculator for this, but it breaks out to about an average of 1 arrest per quarter for the previous 10 years. At some point, you think this guy's going to think, maybe I should change my life instead of getting arrested once a quarter. Nah, I'll just continue this for the next 10 years. You know, this guy was threatening to kill people on the subway. Daniel Penny stopped him. And now you have the racial component, right? You have the BLM folks who are out there screaming and yelling that maybe we should have black vigilantes. You know, that ideology is on its way out the door. It was voted out. Americans are sick and tired of hearing that. They're on their last breath. We finally got some common sense coming in. But until cities like New York get rid of people like Los Angeles did.
Yeah,
with Gascon. Until they start getting rid of these people like Bragg and the ideology that has permeated these DA offices, we're going to continue to see more of this, but it's on its way out. I think we're getting ready to breathe some fresh air.
Yeah, boy, I hope you're right. Mark Walters with us from Armed American Radio. We did find out yesterday, though, what caused the death of the United Healthcare CEO. Apparently, and I'm going to say this in the same way Joe Biden would say it, it was a ghost gun. Because if you whisper it, it's scarier. It wasn't a deranged 26-year-old mentally ill man. It was the tool he used to kill the man.
Yeah, well, it fits the narrative, doesn't it? You know, and this is something that we're going to have to look out for moving into the Trump years. As gun owners, we have to start paying very careful attention to what's going on, because the way the narrative is created, they didn't go after the individual who is sick and deranged. What they did was, as you pointed out, they went after the quote-unquote ghost gun, which is a made-up term. It's a media-concocted term. It's a narrative that they've used to define something that they don't like. Would it have mattered if he bought the gun off a shelf and it was made by Sig Sauer? Would that have been better for them? It doesn't make any difference. What he did was he decided to murder somebody, and it's very important to point out the failure of New York's gun control laws. These were sensitive zones. Guns weren't allowed. Silencers are illegal. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I want listeners to think about this. Name me the one law that Hochul or Adams or anybody, the legislature in the state, could have put into place that would have stopped this man. This just highlights the utter failure of gun control across the country. It's not the gun. It's the person who decides to violate the law. Because the last I checked, guys, murder is illegal in New York as well.
We were just talking earlier this morning about how some Missouri lawmakers are trying to push for, you know, stricter gun control again. And you think about how it's not worked. Illinois is a perfect example of that, right? The problem is they're not prosecuting these criminals. They're not held accountable for their actions. They're getting out, they're stealing guns, and they're doing it all over again.
And you know, Kim, they don't care. Criminals don't care. They never will. There's always going to be that element in our society, and we have a right to defend against this. The chilling effect of the Daniel Penny case, for example, let's go back to that for just a second briefly. How many people are going to want to put themselves in this position on the subway now? A lot of people are saying, yay, it's great for self-defense that he was acquitted. Really? The next person that's going to find themselves in that situation is likely going to walk away because he doesn't want to find himself or she doesn't want to find herself going through what Daniel Penny went through.
Right.
Oh, I won't be found. My life is going to be wrecked. I'm going to go bankrupt. I'm going to make it all over the news. I'm going to lose my job. Everything about my life and my career is going to be over, but I'm going to win in court. No, I think I'm just going to move back to the other train car if I can get away
from
it.
He's still
being sued. Innocent people are going to get hurt. Yeah, civilly.
You know, let's get back to the ghost gun for a minute, because I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Mark. Everybody's worried about the fact that he was apparently able to 3D print, you know, a lower and get a receiver and put this in together and 3D print a suppressor. I had no idea you could even do that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't real. I mean, it was effective.
Yeah.
Obviously, he murdered the man. He shot the man in the back as a coward at that range. But he had multiple malfunctions. What we've counted was 3 with the firearm. Okay, so clearly this guy was looking for an untraceable firearm. He thought he could do that if he built the gun himself. Yeah, that was really effective, wasn't it? While you're sitting in a McDonald's, still wearing a mask with a beanie on his head. And now he's going to spend the rest of his life in the slammer, and he's 26 years old, as he should be. As far as I'm concerned, he should get the death penalty. But wait, it's New York. I don't know that they would put him to death. I don't know that they would carry out that sentence. I don't know what New York's laws are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point, it doesn't matter what the tool is. If it's the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, it was ghost fertilizer. The guy went around and bought enough fertilizer to fill a truck up with, and he blew it up in front of a federal building because it was untraceable, because that's how he did it, and he thought he was going to outsmart everyone. But, of course, he didn't.
No, and he did get put to death.
Yes, he did.
Ghost fertilizer. That's the first time I've heard that. I like that. I might steal that. Thank
Feel
you.
Free. Yeah, yeah.
I'll use it.
Yeah. Point being, I mean, it the whole conversation about ghost guns, they were falsely named that to scare people. First of all, it's not easy to put one together. But the point is of them wanting everything to be registered. This guy could have bought a gun illegally, one that was stolen out of somebody's car somewhere because they're not allowed to carry it onto a metro train, for example. If they're in St. Louis, they can't carry it on the metro train to protect themselves. So they put it in their glove box, and then it gets stolen. Then it gets resold to somebody who couldn't walk into a gun store and buy one. So then they find the gun, and they run the serial number on it. All it does is go back to the previous owner who it got stolen from. It gets them no closer to solving the case. So whether the gun was registered or not is really irrelevant.
No, it doesn't make any difference. Like we said, it's a tool. It doesn't matter what he used.
Yes.
Everything is after the fact. Everything is after the fact, not pre, but after the fact. Nobody said, oh, there's an unregistered ghost gun out there somewhere. We better start looking for a guy that might be wearing a mask, carrying a gray backpack, that might have a hood on, that might be flirting with some girl at a hostel, that might wind up in Pennsylvania because there's an unregistered ghost. It's absurd to even think about. But again, what it does, guys, is it fits the narrative that they're able to drive. Now, I do have some advice for AOC. Go clean up your own streets before you start lecturing me. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Because it's FCC friendly.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's insane anyway, and she doesn't want anybody to be able to protect themselves anywhere, for that matter. Mark Walters, always great having you on, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it.
We'll talk again soon. Mark Walters there, Armed American Radio, and Armed American Radio's Daily Defense with Mark Walters, and you can listen to him. He also is a spokesman for the Second Amendment Foundation as well. All right, good stuff. Kim, what are we whimming about
Well, here's a question for you. So let's just say you're watching a football game, and at the very end, it's all women, only women, who are doing post-game analysis. Would that bother you? Is that weird? Well, local guy's take on that is getting some serious pushback.
Kim on a whim.
Let me paint this picture for you. So you're watching a football game. In this case, it's the SEC championship game over the weekend. Game ends, post-game analysis, three women standing there talking about the game. Would that bother you? Because TJ Moe had some things to say about it. This is a guy who played football at Mizzou and is now pretty outspoken in the conservative arena. And he shared a picture of those women, including Holly Rowe, who I recognize. And he said, who actually wants to watch three women stand around and talk about football? I do not.
I'm a little torn on this, and which I said earlier, because I don't think the standard can be that you can't do that job just because you've never played the game, because some of the great male announcers, like Howard Cosell I'm thinking of, are people that certainly never played the game at that level. I don't know if he ever played in high school or not, but he wrote a book saying he never played. And I only bring that up because there's no reason why three intelligent people can't stand around and analyze what just happened in a game, even if they didn't play the game. But often what they've done over the years, and they've kind of conditioned us to this, is that you have one person who does the play-by-play and one person who does the color. And usually the color commentator is somebody that's been involved in the game, because they can give you that extra bit of color and say, well, he ran the wrong route because I know that play and the receiver shouldn't have been here. They should have been over there. And maybe if you haven't played the game, you don't understand that. I mean, I just think it adds something. And I think a lot of people are conditioned to that. And those roles have dominantly been men over the years.
I think you tend to earn more respect when you yourself have experience playing that sport. Think about it like this. Okay, you are going to someone for financial advice. Would you go take financial advice from someone who's broke? No. You would go and
probably
take
not.
Or would you go to someone who claims to be a trainer who's going to get you into shape if they are morbidly obese?
Probably not.
Probably
That's
not.
That's a good point.
Someone who has experience doing what they're trying to tell or teach you about. Do I think that you need to have experience playing in college or playing professionally to go do post-game analysis for football? Absolutely not. But to TJ's point, because I would probably back him up on this, I see it both ways, like you do, but I would probably say, why just three women? Why not have a guy in there? And not just because he's a guy versus, this doesn't have to be a male versus female thing. I'm talking specifically about a guy who's played, who can offer some perspective that three women who have never played a down in football ever just simply couldn't ever possibly, they couldn't add that because they've never experienced that.
Well, to his point, he doesn't have any interest in just sitting around and hearing them talk about it. I didn't see that particular game. I saw the post that he put up about it with the picture of the three of them standing there. I recognized at least two of them, I think, who I've seen as sideline reporters before. And I don't know what the content of it was. He just said he had no interest in listening to what they had to say because he didn't think they were going to add anything to the game. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's completely fair or not. But I'm trying to think of an analogy that of something that women enjoy. I don't know. What would it be? A fashion show or something like that?
Okay, sure. Let's go with the fashion. I don't watch fashion shows, but sure.
Three former NFL offensive linemen standing there trying to describe to you what was going on the runway, you might think to yourself, these people don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Well, I gave the example earlier of watching women's figure skating or watching gymnastics. I don't care if a guy is giving commentary on gymnastics or figure skating if he has done it. Like Kurt, who's the male figure skater? Doesn't matter. Point is, if you've done that sport, fine. But I don't want three dudes, like three big buff dudes who have never skated in their life, figure skated, to be giving commentary.
You prefer three fat slob dudes?
I do.
What are you talking about?
I do,
instead,
yes,
of buff dudes.
Yes. Would that not be weird if you're watching women's gymnastics and you're having three guys who are doing analysis on the floor routine that gymnast just did, and they've never done gymnastics? There are guys, obviously, who do gymnastics.
Right.
But put one of those guys on there. because at least they have that perspective.
You know, at the end of the day, it's his opinion. He's entitled to it. It's not life or death. But I do think maybe the people that follow TJ Moe are more likely to agree with TJ Moe on Twitter. But that tweet has gone viral. Like 23 million people have retweeted it. And the majority of the comments are supportive of him.
He says 90% of the women who have responded to him have said they agree with him. And that's a good point, though, that probably the people who are responding maybe already follow him or follow conservative people who would be in that conservative arena who might be more likely to agree with him.
He's sticking to his guns. So that is his opinion, and you go, TJ Moe. Coming up, we're going to talk to Senator-elect David Gregory. He's the one that's filing a bill that would put a bounty on the head of illegals in the state of Missouri. We'll talk to him right after the top of the hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.